And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 1:45, we think, here on a Tuesday leading into Gamecock baseball. It's all to be determined, but we're with it till we're not today, leading into some South Carolina baseball at the SEC Conference Tournament. With plenty to do in the meantime. Coming up, another blowout in the NBA playoffs. Why does it keep happening? Plus, what do the Vegas win totals tell us about the college football season? Or more specifically, college football teams this year? Could the SEC actually break away to have their own playoff? And Jimbo Fisher just can't let it go. He's still talking about Saban's comments from last week. Plus, why things may be done for Christian McCaffrey and other running backs like him. And whatever else we get to. Depends how long we're on air today. Maybe we'll actually get to a top 10 list on this Tuesday. We'll talk a little Gamecock baseball and the importance of these next couple of days for them in Alabama. And whatever else comes up before first pitch later on this afternoon. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page, where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you for a little while today, leading into South Carolina baseball, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing all right. Quite an embarrassing and disappointing loss last night for the Miami Heat. No starters above 10 points. I turned the game off in the fourth quarter. I usually watch full Miami Heat games, Luke, and I turned it off and started back on my Ozark grind. So I'm feeling a little better about today because Ozark is absolutely phenomenal. But that was embarrassing last night, Luke. But I'm glad to be with you here today, sir, for however long we are on the air.
Yes. Yes, a couple of things. Number one, you could have turned that game off in the first quarter. Yeah. My gosh, they had 1 point through the first, like, 9 minutes.
It was 26-4 at one point. Luke, what are we doing?
Oofa. And then, we'll get into all the Heat and everything. Okay, so now you flip over to Ozark. Happy to hear it. I've said Ozark is my favorite outside of any comedies. My favorite TV show of all time.
Yeah.
Have you been binging all along? Like, are you in the final episodes, or have you just started the binge recently with Ozark?
You know, Luke, I watched the first three seasons, I think, 2 years ago when they were all out, and I binge watched all of those. And now I said, you know what, I need a refresher. So I went back to season three, and I've been grinding through season three. I believe I'm on the second to last episode of season three. It's getting real good again, and my memory is starting to come back about the show. I'm absolutely loving it. Marty Bird, Jason Bateman, is an absolute dog.
He's
amazing, and I cannot wait for season four, part one and part two.
Now, I did finish it. Obviously, no spoilers.
Thank you.
I'll just say, and this doesn't mean anything, I wasn't the biggest fan of the second part of season four.
Okay, that's
my
good to know.
My favorite show of all time. I love it, but the last episodes, now look, it's hard to end a great show like that, but just my two cents after finishing the whole season. The first three and a half seasons, phenomenal. The last half, I don't know.
I didn't think it was the best.
That's good to know, though. So I'll have that in my mind as part two is coming on, and we may differ on our opinions about the ending to the show. Very excited.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great show. Love it. If you haven't seen it yet, what are you waiting for? Get on it on Netflix. We've had Kevin Johnson, who plays Sam on that show. He's been on a couple of times. Now, in regards to, before we dive in, the last piece of business here, programming note. Won't be on the air tomorrow because we have Citadel baseball. I'll be heading up to Greenville later on today to get ready for that one. Whenever they play tomorrow, could be at 9 a.m. They're still figuring out the schedule because of weather. Speaking of weather, that's why we also may be on the air longer than originally planned today. Because I guess what? There was a rain delay in the game?
Yeah, in the first game, rain delay. So it's still TBD on when we will, when Gamecock Network will go on the air.
Yes, whenever they start their pregame coverage, we're going to send it there. As of now, it's going to be 1:45. It was originally 1:15. We'll see. That's the problem with baseball, and I love baseball, right? But you can't plan out certain things. Like a football game, you know, okay, it's 3 hours. And then pre and post if we're talking like a radio broadcast. But just in general, if you're trying to plan out your Saturday, you know, hey, if the Gamecocks are playing at 1, okay, I can go do something at 5 o'clock. I'll meet you there at 5 after the game if you're watching at home. Baseball, if you're locked into the game, you have no idea. It could be a 7-hour game for all you know. You have no idea how long it's going to take. Then you factor in weather. So Georgia, Alabama are playing right now. They got underway, or at least were supposed to, at 10 a.m. And because of some weather, it's pushing some things back. So South Carolina and Florida, we'll see. That's Central time, by the way. So they were supposed to get underway at 11 our time. Right? Yeah, 11 our time, 10 a.m. Central time. The Gamecocks were supposed to be 2 p.m. Eastern. That's been bumped back. And then who knows? For all we know, Georgia, Alabama could go 18 innings. And we'll be with you all afternoon, leading to Florida, South Carolina. Now, for the Citadel, they were supposed to play at 3 p.m. tomorrow. This is not official yet, so sorry if I'm revealing secrets for the Southern Conference. They're supposed to confirm the plans today, but because of weather the next couple of days, they're planning on bumping that Citadel game up till 9 a.m. tomorrow, which we'll have on our sister station. I've done a lot of early baseball games over the years working in minor league baseball. We would always have those education days and let the kids come out at about a 10:30 start. I don't think I've ever done a 9 a.m. baseball game. So that could be new tomorrow. Now, I know for the SEC, like on Wednesday, they'll have a 10:30 Eastern, 9:30 local time game. So pretty similar. That's what you get with these conference tournaments. You're trying to play four games in one day. And again, same idea. When it comes to baseball, you have no idea how long these games are going to take. So you have to plan accordingly. Basketball, no problem getting four games in a day. You know, it's going to be 2 hours, 2.5. Give an extra hour after, extra half hour afterwards, then we're good to go. Now, I've always said, every baseball stadium, I don't care if it costs more money, every baseball stadium should have a retractable roof. Because as somebody who spent many years working in baseball, enough of these rain delays and rain outs. Imagine making plans and not knowing if the plans are actually going to happen. That is so annoying. If you show up at a football game, you know a football game is going to be played for you. You go to a basketball game, you know, unless there's some really weird quirk, you know, the roof is leaking, you know there's going to be a basketball game played in front of you. You go to a baseball game, you never know. Like, all right, hopefully they're able to play tonight. Spent all this money, got the kids out of school early. We traveled here to the game. Let's hope they play. It's crazy. It's like making, you ever try to go out to eat without making reservations, especially here in the, if you try to go downtown Charleston like a Saturday night? We'll just go downtown and try to find a place to eat. I really want to go try that new place. And you walk in, right, and it's like it's an hour wait. And you get all excited, but it's a real gamble that you don't know if you're actually going to have a table or not. And then you go to the next restaurant. Oh, that's okay. Let's go to this other place over here. That looks good. And they tell you, like, oh, sorry, it's an hour and a half. And the whole plan was to go eat downtown, but you didn't make a reservation, so you don't know if it's actually going to happen. That's like going to these baseball games. You make plans. I'm going to go to a baseball game. You have no idea if it's actually going to happen or if it's going to be completed. Crazy. And I love baseball. But every baseball stadium should have a retractable roof. I don't care how much it costs you. Make sure we get these games in. And outdoor baseball is a lot better than indoor baseball, but indoor baseball is just fine when you can't play outdoor baseball. At least you get the games in. Indoor. Now, you can make fun of Tropicana Field all you want, but at least the Tampa Bay Rays know we're playing baseball every night, and the fans can depend on that. Instead of going to a Braves game, you make the trip. I've gone to, I've made plenty of trips growing up in Connecticut. We'd go to Fenway, and you get rained on. It's like, well, we just drove an hour and a half for nothing. That was a waste. Anyways, my whole rant on baseball, especially this time of year. These conference tournaments, you're trying to get four games in a day, all in the same stadium. You got weather that just disrupts everything. We got baseball at 9 a.m. tomorrow now. We got the Gamecocks playing who knows when. Can't rely on any of it. Which takes me to the NBA playoffs. Let's get started with some actual real topics today. The NBA playoffs. You can't rely on anybody in this NBA postseason either. Well, I guess maybe the Warriors against the Mavericks. But not in this Heat-Celtics series. We have alternated blowouts, and last night was no exception. As we already touched on, the game was over in the first quarter. It was embarrassing. The Heat were down 20 points. They couldn't score in that first quarter. And the Celtics even up the series. Now the question is, should you be more impressed with the teams that win these games, doing so in blowout fashion, or should you be more disappointed in the teams that lose these games, doing so in blowout fashion? When we see these topsy-turvy back and forth, who deserves more credit? Who deserves more blame? Is it more about what the Celtics are doing, or the Heat, or the winner, or the loser? Here is Stephen A. Smith on SportsCenter last night answering that question, saying it's a little bit of both in this series with the Celtics and the Heat.
How about both? How about being praised to the winners when they win and being disgusted with the losers when they lose, because they both vacillated back and forth, sticking up the joint or looking absolutely sensational. In this particular case, Boston came out like gangbusters, 29-11 in the first quarter. Derek White filling in for Marcus Smart, scores 10 points in the first quarter, 3 for the rest of the game. Al Horford, anybody that he was defending, shot 1 for 12 from the field for the game. So he was exceptional defensively. But Boston got out, recognized the level of urgency that they had to embrace. Being down 2-1, they knew they couldn't come down, be down 3-1, and expect to win this series. So they came out with the fervor, the tenacity that they needed to win this game. And that's exactly what they ended up doing.
Stephen A., last night after the game at the Celtics, evening the score. Now, credit to the Celtics in that they have not lost back-to-back games. Or let me rephrase that. They have lost back-to-back games just once in the last 4 months. They have not lost back-to-back games in the playoffs. Anytime they lose, they come back and win. And Jason Tatum specifically, in losses in the postseason specifically, is averaging 20 points in losses, and then the very next game is averaging 32. So he comes back with that chip on his shoulder after being embarrassed, plays well the next game. Why you can't do that every game, I don't know. It's almost like I was trying to think of a good example. It just reminds me of like a Will Ferrell movie. Or a character that Will Ferrell would play, where you don't remember anything from like 10 seconds prior, right? So like the Celtics will get embarrassed one game, and then they'll come back with a chip on their shoulder, and they're hungry, and their coach said something similar last night. No, we were embarrassed after the last game. We had to make up for it. And so the Celtics come out and embarrass the Heat and put the game away in the first quarter last night and play great basketball. And then they just go back to the same old Celtics before, forgetting what it felt like to be embarrassed the game prior, and they go out there with a haphazard effort and get embarrassed again. And then the following game, chips back on the shoulder, and they want to embarrass the other team and make up for their embarrassing performance, and vice versa. All the while, the Heat are in the opposite position. The Heat play really well in game one, then they get embarrassed in game two, then they come back, chip on the shoulder, game three. We got to get revenge that embarrassing loss. But then by the time you get to game four, they forget all about that. They get embarrassed again, and now the Heat probably are going to come out and play great at home in game five and win that game. And the Celtics will be embarrassed, and then they'll put the chip on their shoulder and think, okay, we can't be embarrassed again. Right? It's like they have the memory of a goldfish. You forget that this has been going on all series. They play really well to avenge the embarrassing loss, and then they just go back to coasting. And then get embarrassed again, and then embarrass the other team, and so on and so forth, if you get what I'm trying to say. If you follow the series, you know what I mean. But over the past 2 weeks of the NBA playoffs, we have not had a single game decided by two possessions, fewer than 6 points. Been 2 weeks. The closest game was a couple of nights ago, game two between the Warriors and Mavericks, which was decided by 6 points. But no games have been decided by fewer than six. In fact, in the NBA playoffs, I believe we're now up to 37 games in the playoffs. Only six have been decided by fewer than six. It's what I said on the show yesterday, that if you think the Celtics are going to win, you might as well bet them to cover the spread, because we have not had close games. Tonight, Dallas is favored by one against the Warriors. If you have a betting source that provides alternate spreads, whoever you think's going to win, bump that number up to -5 and take them there for better odds, because we don't get any close games in the playoffs. Whichever team wins, they're winning by over 5 points. We've had 37 playoff games. Only six have been decided by fewer than 6 points. Mostly blowouts. In this Heat-Celtics series, the average margin of victory has been, I believe it's 16. Blowouts. Between the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. And they've been largely non-competitive games. Now, this series is going to go at least six. We're guaranteed for that. Probably will go seven. And when you look back years from now, you'll see, wow, right, the Heat and the Sun, they went seven games in the Eastern Conference. What a series. But when you actually watch these games, you realize this really hasn't been much of a series. We're just alternating blowouts. Now, I offered up my theories as to why this has been the case in the NBA playoffs this year. And I have five parts to the theory. Number one, and I've been talking about this over the past week, but I do think it is the reliance of three-pointers. And that's not something you can rely on each night. The three-pointer is so inconsistent that it leads to inconsistent team performances. And if you look at the Heat last night, you know, they were 38%, 14 of 36 from beyond the arc, but they shot it much better as the game went on. Early on, I mean, they were 0 for 15 to begin from the floor. They couldn't throw it in the ocean. Then, also, kind of what I just discussed, the second part of the theory is the bounce back. That a team gets embarrassed, so then they're going to either emotionally or just physically bounce back. Either they can't shoot it that poorly in back-to-back games, or they have too much pride to get embarrassed in back-to-back games. That's why I think the Heat now, heading back home, just got embarrassed last night, will come out with a much stronger effort in Game 5. I took the Celtics to win the first quarter last night, and boy, did they. I didn't anticipate that. But I figured they come out at home ready to play because they got embarrassed in Game 3. And now we just keep flip-flopping. The Heat were embarrassed last night. They'll probably come out strong at home in Game 5. And if the Celtics then get embarrassed, they'll come out strong at home Game 6. We just got embarrassed last game. Can't let that happen. And I go back to my, I guess Will Ferrell will be the best comp. I can't think of an exact character, but it feels like a Will Ferrell movie where you forget everything that transpired before. You know, like you're completely naive or ignorant to whatever else has happened, just focusing on the here and now, and you get embarrassed, and then you fight back, and then you just go back. It's like if you grew up wanting to be friends with a more popular kid, but he was just taking advantage of you and having fun at your expense, and you keep falling for his traps every time, and you think, this time it's going to be different. Right? We're going to be buddies. And then he throws you in a trash can, and you get all ticked off at him, but a day later you forget all about it. And then you get thrown in a trash can again, and you're ticked off again for the next 24 hours. But then you come back to school on a Wednesday, and you forget that all that stuff happened. And we just keep going around and around that you forget all the other embarrassing losses in the series and need the latest one to put that chip on your shoulder. The third part of the theory are just injuries. But more than injuries, also in today's day and age, COVID as well. That we've had guys miss games last minute because of COVID issues. And so when you don't know who's going to be out there, or you're going with a different lineup every night, that too affects things. When you're not at full strength, but your opponent may be, and both of these teams have been suffering losses, both Miami and the Celtics. Miami's pretty banged up right now. So because of the injuries, because of players having to sit out due to COVID, you don't have your full complement of players, stars, roster. That leads to weird outcomes as well. The fourth part of the theory is that we don't have any true stars, and we're seeing that with Jason Tatum. I still don't get this. I guess it's because of the potential of Jason Tatum and what you see last night. But I heard J.J. Redick this morning say Jason Tatum is the top eight player in the league. Top eight players do not go for 10 points and six turnovers at home in a playoff game. That doesn't happen. Right? He is not a top eight player in the league yet. He may have the potential, but he's not consistent. And that's what makes a big-time star. The consistency that you can count on them night in and night out. You know who's inconsistent? Role players. That's why they're role players, because they can't be counted on to lead a team every game. And Jason Tatum, you can't count on him, or haven't been able to, this postseason. Again, in losses, this playoffs for the Celtics, he averages 20 points and shoots 35%. In wins, he's up around 32%, or at 32 points and 51%. That is wildly too inconsistent to be some sort of top player in the league. I need more. That's why the Celtics, again, keep alternating wins and losses. The stars are not good enough or dependable enough night in and night out. Now, there's a few exceptions. Luka, for the most part, gets his every game. His role players, though, are so poor that he obviously can't do it on his own. Even Steph Curry, right, hasn't been great for a lot of this postseason. It's been other guys stepping up at times. And for the Heat, Jimmy Butler's been so good. Now, in his defense, he's a little banged up right now. But the last two games, he's been largely invisible. And his role players, like Bam, was excellent Game 3, terrible last night. Right? In fact, the entire starting five was horrendous last night for Miami. But when you have a LeBron, when you have a Kevin Durant, when you have these guys, right, you can count on them night in and night out. They're going to have big games. And even if they're having an off night, they'll impact the game in a number of different ways as well. And the fifth part of the theory, as I said, we don't have great teams. We have good teams left. We don't have any great teams. And so that also leads to the inconsistency and the parity and the wide-open nature of this NBA playoffs. The Suns were the number one team in the league all year. They couldn't even make it to the conference finals. We don't have great teams. We have good teams. And it's kind of like March Madness, where you pull for the upsets early on, and then it leads to like a St. Peter's in the Sweet 16, and you think, man, I really wish this was Kentucky playing here. Be careful what you wish for. I love Luka Doncic, and Dallas is not some sort of slouch, right? But you get Dallas now in this round, they're probably going to get swept. Maybe they win one tonight, and it's a gentleman's sweep back in Golden State in Game 5. And they're a 4 seed that's led by Luka, who's incredible and fun to watch, doesn't have much else around him. Here they are, maybe overachieving. And now it's like, eh, this isn't really a great conference finals. Probably would have been better if we actually did get the Suns, the team that's supposed to be here, and get the two best teams in the West. There aren't really any great teams, just a series of good teams, and it leads to certainly what has been an unpredictable postseason. The only thing that's been predictable, or the only thing you can count on, are the blowouts. These conference finals have not been great. Now, as we move forward, again, the Warriors will wrap this thing up. No team has blown a 3-0 lead, and Golden State won't be the first. But when you look at the Heat and the Celtics, the Heat, despite last night's effort and some of their injuries, on paper seem to be in a good spot because it's now become a 3-game series. You're at home for 2 of those 3 games. However, the Celtics have been very good on the road. The Celtics have the 4th best point differential on the road, not this year, all time. They're a much better road team than that Celtics team that last won the NBA Finals 13 years ago. And the Celtics have been really good on the road in the postseason. So even though the Heat on paper have home court advantage, the Celtics have been one of the best road teams in the league because the theory is defense always travels, and the Celtics were the number one defensive team in the NBA this year. So the Heat, even though you're embarrassed last night, usually you can feel pretty good. Like, you know what? It's okay. Let's put that behind us. Bury the tape. We now have 3 games to go. We need to win 2 of them, and we're at home 2 of the next 3. Sounds good. But you're going up against a Celtics team that's been really good over this year on the road. And the Heat are pretty banged up. We'll see what happens in this series. At the beginning of the series, I picked the Celtics to win in 6. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to 7 at this point. But I still lean certainly to the Celtics winning this series, matching up with Golden State in the NBA Finals. But man, maybe tonight we get, you know, the Mavericks are only favored by 1. Maybe we actually get a good game tonight. Because otherwise, it's been nothing but blowouts. And the problem with these blowouts is that it's over quick. It's a quick death, right? Miami was down 20 last night in the first quarter. It's not like teams pull away in the second half. Golden State's done that in a few games. But the majority of these games, you know by the end of the first quarter, like, oh, yep, this one's over. I can go throw on Ozark. Don't have to watch the rest of this one. And last night, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't have waited until the fourth quarter to turn that one off. Although I do think I left it on the whole time. I started, you know, not pay attention so much. But I think I did have it on the TV for the entirety of the game. You never know what could happen. We'll see if we actually get a good game in the NBA playoffs tonight. When we come back, we have the win totals now for all college football teams for the upcoming year. What is Vegas telling us about certain teams in college football? We'll get to that next. The Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, what do the Vegas win totals tell us about certain teams in college football this year? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. The Stanley Cup playoffs are rolling on. And my Edmonton Oilers, knock on wood, are looking pretty good. They're up 2-1. They play tonight, game 4, at home. And the Penguins, meanwhile, have been watching from the couch. Now, we had a bet here on the show at the start of the NHL postseason, where we each picked a team to see which one could go longer in the playoffs. I picked those Oilers, who hopefully continue on beyond just the first round, and Trent picked the Penguins of Pittsburgh, who jumped out to a great 3-1 series lead against the Rangers just to let it slip away. The Rangers, by the way, they also play tonight against those stupid Hurricanes, and the Hurricanes right now have a 2-1 lead. So come on, Rangers. The Rangers could really help me out. They knock out Pittsburgh, and then if they knock out Carolina, the most hated team of mine in the NHL, I'll become a huge Rangers fan this postseason.
The Rangers are still under investigation for the hit on Sidney Crosby by defenseman Jacob Trauba. I mean, the Coralville Athletic Commission is looking into it. We are investigating, and hopefully we'll find results soon, Luke.
Yeah, hopefully quicker than, like, the NCAA. We'll hear back 5 years from now what Trent finds in this investigation. But because of all of this, we had a deal that whoever lost the bet would have to get pied in the face. The other part of the deal was originally to get a millionaire's pie, but then a couple of listeners were kind enough to actually bake a pie. It was fantastic. Loved it. Brought it in for us so we could cross off the millionaire pie portion. But the loser, Trent in this case, needs to get pied. And we figured, well, today is a good day because we'll be off the air earlier today. There are no responsibilities with Fan Talk afterwards. So is today the day that we get to pie you?
Today is the day, Luke. Now, I brought in three separate pie tins and some Cool Whip, Ready Whip, whatever you'd like to call it. And that's how we're going to do it, folks. You know, I saw a chicken pot pie at the grocery store this morning when I went in. I said, you know what, we could really do this up. But instead, I was budgeting a little bit, Luke, obviously. So I just went with the Ready Whip and the tin pie things, and I'll get pie in the face. Look for that video probably on the Facebook or the Twitter or the YouTube, wherever.
Yeah. I would love to be able to do it on air, but yeah, that could be hard to figure logistically. And it probably also wouldn't be great radio. So I guess we'll just do it once we're off the air. And hopefully Bobby's around because I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I'm a big pie guy, like pieing somebody. I don't know if I have that in me.
Wow.
So I would actually prefer Bobby to, I'm sure, take out some frustrations from his from Fan Talk and throw a pie right in the face of Trent coming up later on.
Oh, he's going to relish the opportunity to hit me with a pie after all of our NIL conversations. Absolutely, Luke.
That's what he's going to be yelling as he does.
Yep.
You think players should get paid? And he's going to just be ranting the whole time, taking out all his frustrations. You ever just have the Cool Whip right out of the canister?
I'm not a big Cool Whip out of the canister guy, Luke. Yeah, no, yeah, I don't like that. I don't really like the taste of Cool Whip. I will say, ooh, like, I'm not a big whipped cream kind of guy. I will have it on a pie if it's a nice, you know, warm apple pie, blueberry, whatever it is. But I'm not a huge, I never did that. I always thought that was gross.
Yeah, I'm not a, whipped cream doesn't really do it for, there's just not a lot there. There's not a lot of substance.
Yeah.
Right? It's very, you know, very thin. There's not a lot of, I don't think there's a lot of flavor to it. The reason why you need whipped cream, it's the same thing. Like, I don't really put my brothers would always tease me because I'm not a big condiments guy. But you use condiments to mask whatever it is you're eating. So you put whipped cream on, like, a pie because you need to add more flavor to the pie. Why can't you just have a pie? Why do you need to put whipped cream on top of the pumpkin pie? Because the pumpkin pie is not good enough. That's why. So whipped cream, get it out. I don't eat it. Just like, you know, I'll eat French fries without anything. French fries are good enough. I don't need to dip it into ketchup. I'll eat chicken tenders just how they are. I don't need barbecue sauce. Chicken tenders are delicious just how they are.
That's a hot take right there. That is a hot take. Steaming.
I don't put gravy on my turkey. Turkey, now, you know, it's a little dry. That's why you usually have to put some gravy on there. I don't need it. I'll just eat the turkey. Not a big, you know, like, condiment type of guy. So I don't need the whipped cream.
Now, when it comes to an Italian meal, you'll load it up with sauce, right? Absolutely. Or gravy, if you will. Sorry.
Yeah. No, we do the sauce. We don't call it gravy.
No.
No, we go sauce. I'll load it up with the sauce and then plenty of cheese. Now, my father puts cheese on everything. It's, you know, he puts it on everything. Puts cheese everywhere. And cheese is delicious. So those are if you want to call those condiments, yeah, absolutely. I'll top anything with some sauce and some cheese. Absolutely. And then you can keep the whip. You know, last week on the show, we did the frosés during Fan Talk.
That's right. Yeah.
Which went over well. We could keep those whipped cream canisters. Bobby could start doing whippets on the air and see how Fan Talk goes on Friday.
Whippet Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be an interesting show. So keep those canisters around. Vegas has released all of the win totals for the college football season. Now, whether you're a betting man or not, the information provided by Vegas, I think, always helps to tell a story. And when it comes to win totals, fans can be very fanatical, hence the name. We can be emotional. Gamecock fans may think South Carolina is going to win 9 games this year. Clemson fans may anticipate the Tigers go undefeated every year. But Vegas can't include any emotion because they're trying to win money. They're a business. So they make decisions not based off of emotion, but instead based off of kind of smart decision-making, analytics, the different numbers they look at and breakdown, computer models, whatever it may be. Because they're out to make money. They can't be emotional. There's no emotion involved. They're not choosing their favorite teams. They're just picking the win totals for all the teams. So when you look at some of these, I was perusing them last night. Some that may stand out. Clemson, last year won 9 games. The win total this year is 10.5. So just based, we're going just based off of win totals, Vegas sees Clemson taking a step forward this year with DJ coming back as the starting quarterback, despite losing the two coordinators, which is a big boost. Because meanwhile, elsewhere in the ACC, Wake Forest won 10 games last year. They're down to 7.5 this year. Quarterback's coming back. Head coach is coming back. The idea, I guess, being that, last year was a bit of a fluke, for lack of a better term. Wake Forest overachieved. They can't do it again this year. Miami, they won 7 games last year. The win total this year is 7.5. So at least in year one, Vegas doesn't see a huge boost for Mario Cristobal, which kind of goes against, I think, most of the public opinion that Miami won't necessarily win the ACC this year. But I think most college football people like the hire of Cristobal and think that immediately you'll see the impacts of that. You'll see an improvement right away in Miami this year and moving forward. UNC won 6 games a year ago. Their win total's at 7.5 this year, despite losing Sam Howell. So Vegas believes UNC could be better this year, and they probably should be. Last year was a disappointment. And lastly, in the ACC, Pittsburgh. They won 10 games last year. They lose Kenny Pickett. The win total is 8. So you can kind of get from point A to point B, determine that Kenny Pickett was worth 2 wins to Pittsburgh. Now, not all things are the same. They lost some other pieces. Obviously, their star wide receiver, and the schedule is different this year, and some other teams are going to be better or worse than last year. So this isn't an exact science, but you get the idea. Pittsburgh won 10 games last year. Vegas thinks they're going to be 2 games behind this year after losing their quarterback and wide receiver. Elsewhere in college football, Cincinnati, of course, went to the playoff last year, won 12 games. The over-under is 9.5 this year after losing their quarterback and having a historic year a year ago. You wouldn't expect Cincinnati to replicate that. Vegas puts their win total at 9.5. If you go to the Big Ten, Michigan. I'm down on Michigan. I've always been a Harbaugh guy. I have supported Harbaugh. I have extended family members that are big Michigan people, so I used to get Michigan gifts like growing up all the time. I've always had a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for Michigan. But I've compared them to Florida of a year ago with how Dan Mullen treated the offseason heading into the year, similar to what Harbaugh has done heading into this season for Michigan. Plus, they lost their 2 best players on defense and, their 2 coordinators. A lot of changes for Michigan. Last year, they won 11 games. The win total this year is 9. So after their playoff appearance, Vegas expects them to take a step back. I do as well, maybe even bigger than 9. Maybe I would take the under on that. I could see maybe an 8-4 year for Michigan. Maybe not quite as big of a disaster as Florida. But last year for Michigan was more of the outlier than it was the expectation. So I think it's fair to wonder if they'll take a step back this year after going through all the offseason changes and Harbaugh having 1 foot out the door. Michigan State last year was such a surprise. They won 10 games this year. Their win total's 8. Ohio State stays pretty consistent. Penn State pretty consistent to what they did last year. And then elsewhere in college football, because the 2 things you always look at, of course, are, like quarterbacks and head coaches are the 2 big changes that you would imagine would affect things. Now, Oklahoma won 10 games last year. You swap out Lincoln Riley with Brent Venables, and it depends where you look. But this source has Oklahoma, the win total this year, at 10. So that's a little bit of a feather in the cap of Brent Venables. That in his first year at Oklahoma, they have them winning just as many games as they did a year ago at Lincoln Riley. So in the eyes of Vegas, that was a bit of a lateral move. Venables coming in just as good in year one as Lincoln Riley was last year. By the way, Texas won 5 games last year. The win total this year in Vegas is 8.5. So the expectation is that Texas, in year 2 of Steve Sarkisian, will take potentially a big leap forward. A couple last ones to get to. Let me scroll down here to the SEC. First on the way, Notre Dame won 11 games last year. Their win total this year is predicted for 9 in the eyes of Vegas, after swapping out Brian Kelly with Marcus Freeman, who has never been a head coach before. I'm also down on Notre Dame this year because of that. We've talked about it throughout the offseason. Vegas sees a 2-win drop-off this year in Freeman's first year. By the way, if they match that win total and they win 9 games in year 1 and you go like a 9-3, that's pretty good for Notre Dame. Oregon lost their coach. Their win total matches the same as it was last year after replacing Mario Cristobal with Dan Lanning, the defensive coordinator coming in from Georgia. And if we get to the SEC, we've had a lot of changes in the SEC. Florida made a coaching change. They won 6 games a year ago. Vegas puts their win total at 8.5. So again, it's not an exact science, but the numbers could suggest that Vegas eyes Billy Napier as about a 2.5 win upgrade this year for Florida. You have the Gamecocks, of course, bring in a Spencer Rattler. They won 6 games in the regular season last year, 7 games overall. Vegas, on this source, has their win total set at 6.5. I've also seen 5.5. So I was surprised. You know, Vegas, again, based off of this exercise, does not view Spencer Rattler much of an upgrade, or at least not a big enough upgrade to impact the team and the total record, the final record at the end of the year. And then elsewhere, Auburn with Brian Harsin on the hot seat, won 6 games last year, win total 7. Brian Kelly showing up at LSU, they won 6 games last year, win total this year is set at 8.5. So Kelly, much like Billy Napier, is seen as about a 2.5 win upgrade just by arriving at LSU, which I tend to agree with. Ole Miss won 10 games last year, then lost their quarterback and offensive coordinator, and their win total this year is set at 8. And then lastly, because I know also numbers don't play great on the radio, we're running through a bunch of numbers, Texas A&M, because Jimbo Fisher has certainly inserted himself into the news lately, and we'll get to that more in just a moment. But last year, they won 8 games in what was a disappointing season. This year, their win total is 9.5. So Vegas anticipates a step forward for Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M this year. So when you go through some of these teams, the point being that in the eyes of Vegas, and just one source's opinion, Spencer Rattler on paper not expected to have a huge boost for the Gamecocks. Wake Forest expected to take a big step back after overachieving last year. Kenny Pickett was worth about 2 victories to Pittsburgh a year ago. Desmond Ridder and what Cincinnati did last year, worth almost 3 wins. Cristobal doesn't change a whole lot at Miami. Brian Kelly and Billy Napier bring about 2.5 wins to their team this year, just simply based on paper. Interesting to see how Vegas sees some of these changes, whether they're upgrades, lateral moves, Brent Venables to Oklahoma. They are predicted to have the same number of wins as last year at Lincoln Riley. Interesting. USC, meanwhile, I skipped USC. They bring in Lincoln Riley. USC won, what, 4 games last year? Their win total's 9.5. That's the biggest turnaround. Now, it also helps with the job done in the transfer portal, but when you bring in a Caleb Williams at quarterback, you bring in 2 of the top wide receivers from their recruiting classes, you bring in a Lincoln Riley, USC is expected to have the largest turnaround of the major schools, and Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams and company are expected to have the largest impact on their program. They won 4 games last year. Their win total is 9.5. They're expected to more than double their victories this year. And The Athletic did an interesting piece this week comparing the last couple of off seasons and how much turnover is happening in college football now with the transfer portal. And this past year, obviously, a lot of changes have come to teams that went through coaching changes, and none more than USC. And I shared this earlier in the offseason, but USC, right, they're showing, we always talk about, you know, college football becoming like the NFL. Well, USC has been using that free agency type of style to quickly turn around their roster and potentially more than double their victories this year. The win totals in Vegas telling a story. And Vegas not higher on anybody more than Lincoln Riley and USC in terms of an impact from a move this offseason. When we come back, a couple of things. Could the SEC actually break away to hold their own playoff? And Jimbo Fisher is still ranting and raving about Nick Saban. We'll get to that. The Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, Jimbo Fisher just can't leave Saban's comments alone. Get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Well, the Gamecocks game has been pushed back even later. South Carolina against Florida in the first round of the SEC tournament. So we'll essentially be with you almost for a normal show today, after all. And probably beyond that. We'll see. We'll be with you until late into the evening at this rate. Build roofs over all these baseball stadiums. Or go play somewhere. Go play indoors. Get these games in. Especially when you have a conference schedule like this, a conference tournament, because one game thrown out of whack, right, throws everything off. It's going to be a long day out there in Alabama. And then when you talk about starting pitchers and they don't know when they're actually going to start and you're waiting around and you're getting loose and they have to shut it down, and it's tricky. So whenever South Carolina and Florida actually gets underway, we'll switch over to that coverage. but that'll be closer to about 3 o'clock Eastern time here this afternoon. Georgia and Alabama struggling to get through their game due to the weather. Speaking of Alabama, we know about Saban's comments. Jimbo Fisher fired back. Jimbo's still talking about what Saban said last week. He did a sit-down interview with the local sports reporter, I guess. You know, I think like a local TV station, the sports guy there, in I think it was like San Antonio. And it aired last night. Here was a couple of clips from the conversation, of course, talking about what Saban said about Jimbo. Jimbo's still defending himself. Here's a part of what Jimbo had to say in the sit-down yesterday.
Of the 11 guys we have in placing that came early, one guy has an NIL deal.
Really?
Yes.
Just one?
Just one. So all these stories you're hearing are complete lies. I went and checked with our compliance people because we have nothing to do with it. One guy.
Of the 11?
Yes.
The early enrollees.
Gotcha. So that said, what is all this dust up about then?
Great point.
I love that at the end. Not good question. Great point. What's all this dust up about? Instead of saying that's a good question, right? Just great point. I could listen to Jimbo Fisher get worked up all day long. Here's another part of the interview. You heard in that first clip somebody in the background, like PR or from the sports info department at Texas A&M, making sure to provide the context to what Jimbo was saying about early enrollees. It gets even better in this next part. Jimbo gets really fired up talking about Nick Saban and the claims last week.
Does that change the...
Doesn't change anything. Because I know the truth, and I've always known the truth.
Why would he make that accusation?
I have to ask him. Just let me handle it.
Why would he make that accusation, though? If it's...
Why did you make that accusation?
I didn't make any accusations.
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Has he apologized to you at all?
No, we haven't talked.
And would you accept his public apology?
I said we're not talking.
But he publicly apologized. Do you accept that?
I didn't read it. I don't read social media.
It's so good. Between yelling at the woman that's just trying to help him from Texas A&M, let me handle it. And then the way his voice and his cadence when he says that. No, we haven't talked. And the quick responses, it's so good. Such classic Jimbo Fisher getting all worked up. Trent, let's play that again. I love that. And by the way, Jimbo, I think, is remarried for a second time. Like, God bless his wife, right? Let me handle it. I can only imagine how often he uses that phrase as well. He got fired up yesterday. Here was Jimbo again. I love the way his voice changes, too. It goes a little high pitch, and it becomes a little more like folksy. And after that, when he responds, very quick answers about not talking to Saban. Again, here was Jimbo yesterday.
Does that change the...
Doesn't change anything. Because I know the truth, and I've always known the truth. That's why.
Why would he make that accusation?
I have to ask him. Just let me handle it.
Why would he make that accusation, though? If it's...
Why did you make that accusation?
I didn't make any accusations.
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Has he apologized to you at all?
No, we haven't talked.
And would you accept his public apology?
I said we're not talking.
But he publicly apologized. Do you accept that?
I didn't read it. I don't read social media.
By the way, now that I listen to it again, there's like a gasp after he says, let me handle it. I don't know if that was from the woman he was yelling at or somebody else in the room. Like, couldn't believe Jimbo was going at somebody there that was trying to interject with some piece of context. Jimbo getting fired up. Now, I said the same thing after he called for a press conference the very next day. And then, you know, Saban, as expected, took the high road, and he wasn't going to respond, and he apologized, and he's moved on. Saban hasn't said a word. You know, this is almost like Machiavellian by Nick Saban to float that out there. Knowing Jimbo, I'm sure, as well as he does since they work together and whatever has happened since, and letting Jimbo almost like self-destruct, right? Just throwing some breadcrumbs out there and knowing that Jimbo's going to pounce on it and keep going on and on. And here he is following the weekend. Saban hasn't said a word since his initial comments. And what Saban said, again, in the grand scheme of things, wasn't all that bad. I mean, sure, it deserves a response, but I thought a more calculated response like Deion Sanders, as opposed to Jimbo just bringing a flamethrower to Saban and doing so publicly and now doing the sit-down interview and still talking about it. But you know what they say, right? Those who shout the loudest usually have the most to hide. And Jimbo has really gone on the defensive and the attack. And he's shouting. He's shouting at the own people from his school trying to help him out in that sit-down interview. It's the same idea as they always say, like the loudest person in the room is the weakest one. Right? Use any of the cliches you want about being the loudest. Usually when the loudest people are usually also like the most insecure. They're trying to cover up for something. Why are they maybe as obnoxious as they are? Or they have the flashy clothes or the expensive cars because they're trying to overcompensate for something else in their life. Right, Jimbo kind of checks all of these boxes. Here we are into the following week, days later, Saban hasn't said a word, apologized about it, then shut his trap. And Jimbo's still going on, still fired up, not even sitting there having like a normal conversation. He's getting worked up. He's yelling at people from the school. The loudest person usually has the most to hide. I think there's a reason why, as I've been saying all along, right? This touched a nerve with Jimbo. Sure, maybe he's defending himself. Maybe this is like a Johnny Depp, Amber Heard situation. We're going to have a lawsuit and a court case drag out for 2 months to defend your name. But the way Jimbo's responding, it almost seems like, you know, there's a reason why. Because what Saban said, as many believe, there's a lot of truth to that when it comes to Texas A&M. We'll wrap up Hour 1 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio. Toward your destination, though you may find from time to time complications.
Wrapping up Hour 1 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We were talking about Jimbo Fisher last segment, who's still talking about the Nick Saban comments from a week ago. And as I said from the day it happened, when Jimbo held the press conference, right, if you ever had somebody say something about you, but you know, like, that's not true, it doesn't really bother you much because you know, like, it's inaccurate, even if it's in a public forum like this, as public as this is, you could probably, like, brush it off and move forward. But the fact that Jimbo is still going on and on, and obviously was not happy with what was said. We'll get to Justin Thomas, who in the afterglow of his major championship, he also took a shot at Jimbo Fisher. Justin Thomas went to Alabama, big Alabama fan. We'll get to that coming up. Plus, should the SEC, should they, will they break away to have their own playoff? When it comes to Jimbo, though, and you look at the recruiting and how it took such a big step up this year, it's like baseball of the last 25 years. When Brady Anderson suddenly hits 50 homers, or Brett Boone hits a career high, you know, 40 home runs one random year, what do you automatically assume? He's juicing. When Texas A&M brings in the greatest recruiting class ever and more blue chips this year than all other years under Jimbo combined, what do you automatically assume? They must be doing something. And Jimbo, obviously, still very fired up. Hour 2 coming up next. The Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.